From KCRW, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional, a program of personal documentaries and radio movies. And today on the program, a story about the devastating effects of post-traumatic stress disorder on British soldiers coming home from combat. But in this case, the story is told not by the soldiers, but through the inner thoughts and fears of the women who've taken on the very difficult job of caring for them. Be aware that the episode has some very disturbing and harrowing descriptions of family trauma. It may be upsetting for some listeners. From KCRW, it's Unfictional and The Enemy Within.
In the night, she jitters, and I feel the jitters. Her legs start to kick out, her elbows start moving, her head, she twitches. It's almost like she's itchy inside. I hear a breathing change. It gets quite ragged. She'll go like she's scared. You know when you sleep and maybe you can feel a train through the wall? It's like that, constantly shaking. But when she's in a flashback, she's still. And then she runs.
It's my first diary entry. I just arrived for a client meeting. Been crying most of the way. It's been a really, really tough few days. Made probably even harder because Sunday was such a brilliant day. Just a normal day in our household and everyone laughing, and it's just really nice. And then within 24 hours, something's triggered my husband's PTSD, and he's distant and quiet and sad, and just can't get through to him. Because it's trauma they're not supposed to share with their loved ones. A lot of their experiences, because of worrying about transferring it to their family. So I'm trying to help him, but I don't know how, because I don't know where he is at the moment, what he's trapped in.
Got the birds singing.
It's not as serene as you think, is it? I really should do this garden. Look at the bramble.
I think it's because we're not staying that I think I've decided that I won't. When it's sunny, like it is today, and certainly in the mornings when nobody's up, I will come and sit out in the garden. I like the warm, you see. I'm like a little cat. When nobody's awake, I can do what I like. But I can't sit out here all day and leave Kelly in the living room all day. That's not fair. But she can't come and sit out here. But I can go and sit in there. So what tends to happen is I'll go and sit in there. And then we, you know, we do lots of... if we win the lottery, what would we do?
We were visiting a beach with his family, a nice, quiet beach that we thought we'd be able to cope with. The children went off and played, and it was boggy, and my daughter was sinking. She wasn't in any danger, but she was sinking, and she called for her dad to help her, and he just froze. He couldn't do anything to help her. His mind was back in the Gulf. He could remember the bodies that were under the sand blowing and the hair showing through the sand, and that's all he could see when he saw the seaweed. It looked like body parts. It looked like hair, tufts of hair sticking up from underneath the sand in the Gulf. He was taken back to the Gulf in that moment, and it's incidents like that that are with you all the time, whatever you do.
Yeah. once I'd read the things that Kelly had seen and done, I think, and I could put it into context, although it's slightly more horrifying, the thought of knowing why, it's easier to understand why she behaves the way she behaves sometimes. You know, there are certain smells that affect Kelly. Hot sand, other stuff that I'm not comfortable on saying. When she says, you know, children screaming and crying really affect her, because she saw stuff that involved women and children and that she didn't, you know, she obviously didn't process at the time, but she now knows that those things are attached to the traumas. I've said to her before, you know, if this makes you uncomfortable, if this smell makes you uncomfortable, let's just go. Let's not. But she will fight it, you see. She thinks she has to keep putting herself through. It's almost, for me, I feel like she's torturing herself, but she feels like she's trying to break it. But it doesn't work. And I still feel like she does it almost as a, not so much punishment, but almost to feel something, because she feels emotionally numb almost all the time. Fear is her main emotion, so if she can feel anything other than that, I think she almost forces herself to feel stuff.
I wanted to record this as my husband the other night had a really bad nightmare. It hasn't had a bad nightmare for a long, long time. It was one of those nightmares where it shocked us and frightened us both a bit, so we were up for a few hours afterwards. It made me realise I don't know what's going on in his head. I don't know what he's having to deal with. He protects me from so much of it.
I've been asleep and I've felt her go rigid and I've woken up. And then she's dragged me out of bed by my hair and laid on top of me, but screamed at me.
Get down, get down.
And shouted, get down, get down. Mortar. She dragged me out of bed and tried to force me under the bed, which was a divan. She will literally, out of nothing, get out and run. And it's quite terrifying. But she just runs forward. And that tends to be into the drawers. She did once hit the window pretty hard.
She nearly broke her arm once.
She's hit the end of the bed. She then doesn't wake up. With nightmares, she wakes up. With flashbacks, she doesn't wake up. She just goes back to sleep.
I'd asked him to get up early so that I had some help with the baby, because I had to be out of the house by a certain time. He waltzes downstairs 20 minutes before I said I needed to leave. And then when I've asked him for help, he then decides he's going to call me every name under the sun, throw something at me. I'm trying to not get irate, because obviously I don't want it to escalate. And he even picked up his clean laundry clothes that I just popped on a chair, which I hadn't taken upstairs yet, threw them on the floor and then started shouting at me because I had left a mess for my shit. Just don't want to be here anymore. I want to be somewhere else with my daughter, or I want him to be somewhere else.
Retrospectively, I think I would have told myself to run if I'd known how difficult it was going to be. But I wouldn't be without her. Not ever. Not now. I'm engaged. But yeah, no, I wouldn't. I would never leave her. I've never been in a situation where I've felt that this is the wrong relationship. I just know that things are difficult for her. And when they get really hard, I just think about how awful it must be to be her.
There are times when I've had to call the police to help me with my husband, help me From my husband? That sounds awful. Help me from my husband. But I just can't cope, and I've had to call the police when he's been particularly bad. And I've got the children out of the house. I've used the code word for the children to quickly move. I've come back to the house and the whole street has been filled with blue lights, with armed response, with vans, with cars, with dogs. They've been waiting for me to calm him down, and nobody else seems to be able to do it. And it's frightening. It's frightening when you're the one that has to do everything. I have to be the wife, I have to be the doctor, I have to be the police, I have to be the psychologist, I have to be everything for my husband. Invariably they tell me that my husband doesn't need the police, he needs medical help, it's just not forthcoming. And this is my life, this is what I have to live with, what my family has to live with on a daily basis.
She has, you know, there are things about Kelly. She has the most amazing laugh. She doesn't laugh enough, but she does. When she laughs, her whole face lights up. And she is stunningly beautiful. She has no concept of how pretty she is, you know. And she's always saying to people, oh, without her, oh, my God, yeah, my life would be nothing. And I think, well, without you, I would have nothing either. She is as much my life as I am hers, you know, very sadly.
You've got to carry on as normal, and it's really important for him to carry on with work and for nobody to really know what's happening inside. So we do, we put up a front and we talk and we do try and work through it, but when it's like this, it's so hard because he's gone to work and I'm just terrified because I don't know how bad it is. I don't know what is going to trigger something today and how bad that could be. And it's just, you don't know what to do.
Don't get me wrong, Kelly's called me some horrible names when she's been going through an episode. And I've just gone, it's just PTSD. That's just what PTSD is, you know. Sometimes I have to say to her that that's not even a human reaction. I don't know why you're behaving like that, but I know this isn't you because I actually know you. But she'll tell me it is. But that's just, you know, I think otherwise I'd be eaten alive by it. When she's at her worst place, then she runs, you see, because she's scared that she'll hurt me, so she runs away. She knows if she hurts me, she's gone. There's no messing around. I won't live in fear, and I won't have my children live in fear. So we don't, you know, we don't have raised voices. We don't scream and shout. We don't have any of that sort of behaviour because that's not who I am. So because her illness makes her feel irrational, she then runs because she has no release from it. And because there's nobody else other than me who deals with it, and when it's me that she's going at, she knows that she needs to get out, so she runs off up the road. She's been out of this house up the road with no socks and shoes on in her pyjamas before. Even all the bad times, I love her to pieces, you know. I don't, because I don't see them as her, because I know that's not her. And I think as long as I hold on to that, I think we'll be fine. You'll see us getting our chips at the seaside, holding hands, her in a Zimmer frame.
Waking, screaming in the middle of the night. He was so distressed. There was very little I could do to calm him, other than just to remind him of where we were, that we were at home, that he was safe, that he was well.
The inability to separate his subconscious from his conscious. The panic of not being able to find his body armour. Pulling open the wardrobe door and screaming to let me out. I think the worst we've had this far would be the hands around the neck situation.
He didn't appear to be in any way awake at the time that was happening. And it took him, I suppose, some minutes to really come back round again. Most of my sleep was disturbed because of me worrying. I couldn't sleep at night because I worried about what happened to him during the day. I couldn't sleep because I worried if he was going to wake screaming. I couldn't sleep because I worried that if I went out the next day, or if I went back to see family or went out with friends, I worried that he would kill himself.
The last time that my sleep was disturbed was due to a reoccurring dream that I often have. Last year, my husband Luke tried to kill himself. I was supposed to be visiting family, but returned home early to find my husband Luke in the kitchen. In my dream, I don't go home early. There's a very, very loud knock at the door, and that's when I wake up.
We have a very good relationship when it comes to suicide, because I think it's one of those things, if you don't discuss it, it's very easy for it to sweep over you. So when it became apparent that Kelly wants to kill herself, and it, you know, I don't think it's that she doesn't want to live, it's that she doesn't want to live like this. And she doesn't want to live with the nightmares. She doesn't want to live with the screaming. She, you know, there isn't a day goes past where she doesn't contemplate running. She's got a plan. It's all in place, but it's, she just doesn't do it because I don't let her. The things that you could be helped with, like tablets, oh, well, you could pump your stomach, right, that one's out, you know, hanging yourself, rope could break. You know, she's discussed all of this with me. She has a plan that will end in her death. I know, it's just, it sounds mad to even, like, when you think about it, I know this plan. I very rarely leave Kelly in a position where she could leave without me. You know, I take car, if I go out, God forbid I go out on my own, which doesn't happen very often, I take my car keys with me. She can't get access to money. She doesn't have any access to money. She has to ask for her own money, you know. And I don't say no, but when Kelly loses coherency, then there's a stopgap before she can do anything to hurt herself. You know, she'll say, I'm having a bad day. Like earlier on today, we had, you know, we had a bit of bad news, and she just said, you know, it'd just be so much better for everybody if I wasn't here, wouldn't it?
He's really struggling with his PTSD to the extent that he was convinced I was trying to kill him. He says I was trying to strangle him. It wasn't even close to what was happening around me, and I got hit in the face, and he got himself in such state that I had to phone the police because I didn't know, in all honesty, what else to do. So we had to go through that whole rigmarole of him being arrested, taken to a police station. I had to go off to the A&E and get checked over, and so we've now got social services coming over today to check and make sure everything's safe for our child. He's still reeling from everything that's happened. Unfortunately, I just, in all honesty, didn't know what else to do, which is not a good situation to be in. I felt awful that I had to phone up and get the police to come out and take him away. And yes, it's very difficult for us all, but I'm leaving my job soon, in the next couple of weeks, so that I can be at home and actually be a carer to him properly as opposed to working full-time. So we'll see how that goes.
Hello? Hello. Are you on your way? Oh, I'll let Kelly... Everything is a fight. Yeah, can you? She's having a really bad time at the minute, so... Appointments and psychiatrists and doctors and
compensation and help. And if you could see her, then at least I feel like she can have a chat with you, because she hasn't got anybody to talk to except me.
Absolutely sick of having to fight all of the systems all of the time.
Yeah, it was all good, but it's not anymore.
The country breaks her mind. They don't fix her. Who else helps? Who do you turn to?
She didn't want to come. She's coming, babe. She'll be here in 15 minutes.
Fix her. They just farm her off to the NHS, who are ill-equipped to deal with people like her. Just lost at who to go to for help. Soul destroying. Lost at who to ask for support for me, for my son.
She did phone.
I thought it was
about
crisis. Yeah, you know, we've got a CPN, a crisis team that said they were going to get in touch yesterday. We were told that, you know, she would have an appointment within days. Said they're going to get in touch today. I mean, it's midday, they still haven't got in touch. I have to fight again.
No, she'll call back.
I'm worn down by having to care for somebody who should be cared for by the people that broke her. Just so difficult.
Oh, okay, I'll let...
To try and maintain some form of family environment and try and maintain a reason for her to wake up every day is getting progressively more difficult.
Ah, okay, I'll let her know. She's coming. She'll be here in a bit.
Possibly. I know she'll be annoyed that I forced her to leave the office and come and see Kelly, but I don't care. Kelly needs to see her today. She hasn't seen her for 2 weeks. She already put off last week's, and the week before she left it 4 days after she was supposed to be here. I'm not having it, to be honest. So it's awful, isn't it? I'm a bit of a bulldog when it comes to Kelly. She'll never be fixed. We've been told that. She is permanently injured. We've been told that. But she can be permanently injured and stable. That will be fine. So I'll fight for it.
He's the kindest man in the world, but it's winding him up that I'm asking him to do something when I know he just wants to run a million miles in the direction. I get it, but it's so hard. And now he's fine, it's all good, and I'm just left feeling so angry with him. It's not about being there to console me, it's just picking up a few of the tasks. And I know it's not his fault, and I feel awful. I feel so guilty about saying stuff like this, and I know it's not him. But it's just so hard, and it just creeps up on you. I don't know what is going to trigger something today and how bad that could be. And I love him so much. And it's... I just want to help him, and I know I can't. I know I just got to be there and trust him. Right. Okay, time to pull myself together and go into my meeting.
The little dog is Lottie the pug. She's my dog. She's, as you can see, she's very excitable and a bit leaky and a bit manic. But she's very loving and full of personality. Eileen says that she's a bit stinky, but I love her. That one there is Ruby, who is Eileen's dog.
She's quite well behaved, is Ruby. She's a bit of a lady. Stop hitting.
There are days, weeks, sometimes like weeks on end, where it is hell. But there is always a light at the end of it, that actually... We live this hell, and there are hundreds of people who live like me, but we live it because we love the people. You know, and what Kelly saw and
did in service shouldn't stop her from being loved and shouldn't stop her from having a happy life, even though the happiness may be spread thinner than other people's.
She's the dancer. She has moves. Me, I'm like...
You'd be well impressed.
Handbag, let's just sidestep round it. That's where... Or lots of arms in the air pointing, I'm good at.
Yeah.
There's no... Yeah, I've got
if
no...
there was a fire in the building, you'd know where to go. Yeah. Because she'd be head down, hand up.
She's the dancer. And the singer. She's got a beautiful voice. Haven't you?
No, I think you're biased, but thank you.
Kelly and I love each other desperately. And even in the worst times, I never forget that. I never forget that when the page turns, she'll love me again. It's just she's not herself at the moment.
We always used to have a bit of a joke. Like, yeah, we'll be eating fish and chips when we're like 60, 70 years old kind of thing.
See old people, don't we, holding hands. And we're like, yeah, that'd be us.
I always look at her and think, oh... You'll be mine one day.
Aww. Always was.
Yeah. But officially?
No, yes.
On paper?
Married.
Off the shelf.
We still have the ability to talk about how we feel. Once we lose that communication, I think, though, I will have lost all hope.
I would sit and I would watch him and I would just be in awe of this person that I love so deeply. Yet, hours before, I may have a conversation with him and it would result in something being broken.
You find your own coping mechanism and that in itself can drive you further apart. So again, talking and being really honest with each other.
What makes me feel hopeful?
Helps to bring
trying to think.
Most days we've lost all hope,
grateful, grateful,
but we have to hold on.
Can't really look mainly because doesn't want to have sex with me. That leads to questioning your own attractiveness, your marriage.
The largest strain you can have in your relationship to the extent that
I'm also hopeful that the army will take
responsibility.
So important that in this moment we don't
pressure most of what was done to himself
and understand their life.
What I can do is just at night hold him and tell him I love him and it's going to be okay. But I don't even know if it is because I don't actually know what's wrong. So I'm trying to help him, but I don't know how because I don't know where he is at the moment. I don't know what he's thinking about and where, what he's trapped in.
The Enemy Within was produced by Eleanor McDowell with Matthew Green. It was a Falling Tree production for BBC Radio 3. There's photos and information about this story at kcrw.com/unfictional. I'm Bob Carlson, producer of Unfictional. The editor is Nick White. The associate producer is Carla Green. And please join me next time for Unfictional from KCRW.